The Maria Sanchez Show, a conversation, not a confrontation. On MariaSanchezShow.com.
Hi, welcome to the Maria Sanchez Show, and thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate the honor, and we are just humbled by the amount of circulating and reposting and sharing of our programs that you have done. So thank you for that. And if you haven't, go ahead and do so. We have as our guest today, Louise Wachu. Louise, welcome to the program. As a survivor of genocide in Rwanda and as somebody who's an advocate and an expert in international relations, I look forward to our conversation about the female students who were kidnapped from the Nigerian state of Borno and the Islamic Jihadist group who has executed that, as well as the global outrage that it has created, and your personal experience with it. So thank you for taking the time. We do really appreciate your being here with us today.
Thank you, Maria. I'm looking forward to talking to you too.
So let's talk about your experience first, and then we'll talk about the most recent news, because there was some news yesterday that the United States deployed 80 members of its armed forces to Chad to help search for the kidnapped Nigerian schoolgirls. So this is very much a story still going on. And can you share, please, with us your experience about what happened to you in Rwanda?
My experience, you know, I used to actually think that it was so dramatic what had happened to us, because we had to run when the war happened and people started killing, and we could afford our survival. We survived pretty much through paying whenever people wanted to kill us. So one of the things that has really touched me is the lack of humanity when you're in a time of conflict, and also the corrupted consciousness that allows a human being to value a paper note more than they value life. So in times and in zones of conflicts, it's much deeper than we actually think. And so one of the devastating things for me has been to realize that I have been saved by money and not by humanity at all, you know. So it kind of makes me question humanity. And it took me a very long time, actually, to accept, like, the responsibility of making money. Once I was in Canada, I didn't really want to make money.
Interesting. Because I can see how you could see that it's the root of evil.
It's, you have no idea.
So you were born and raised in Rwanda?
I was born and raised in Rwanda, and also had an opportunity to travel as a child, as young, and also live in Kenya, in Nairobi, so which I also had an opportunity to cross many international people and go to an international school and learn many languages. So it felt like I had already traveled when I eventually came out of Africa into North America.
And in terms of the genocide that was happening around you, how old were you?
I was 16 or 17. I was still underage. I remember I was still getting punished for being out late. I still had a curfew. I had to come home like before the sunset. This is how we calculate time in Africa, you know. You have to be home before sunset. And I actually remember, like, the day that they shot down the president's plane in Rwanda, because that was the detonator for the what unfolded, that I had spent my day just chilling in town and doing all the things that my parents had forbidden me to do. They go in town and go to a dance. Like, we were so careless, and so we didn't really know how big, the bomb,
the global impact,
or the volcano,
right,
that we were in was going to erupt, you know. So,
well, and that also speaks to the innocence of children.
Yeah.
Which is something. So did you see personally firsthand atrocities that happened, or you were spared that because of your ability to stay out of it?
I saw a lot of dead people on the streets where we passed, and we actually we passed through a lot of dangerous places, and we had chosen like a safe road to get out of Kigali when the time came. And then the road that we thought was going to be safe is the road that we got bombed on. And luckily, the bomb did not touch the car that we were in. So we kind of turned around and then chose to go into one of the most dangerous roads. But it was kind of empty and a lot of death around it. So I saw a lot of dead people on the streets or on the ground or on my path. And I would always look back and just, you know, think. And I'm still thinking.
Yeah. I'm wondering, does anybody help filter that for you or put it into perspective or help assuage your fears or, you know, your curiosity?
Well, this is, I suppose, how I became a writer. I have two books now. And also one of the things when I first came to Canada, when I started working when I was at university, I got a part-time job working for immigration services, the government, and this and that, and translating for other refugees because I'm good in languages. So I was translating for other refugees that were coming out of Rwanda, Burundi, Congo, and sometimes very few Tanzania. And when I started working for them and translating other people's stories, I realized that my story was actually not the worst stories, that a lot of people, a lot more people than me, have lived so much more horrible things. And so I think this is where I started thinking that, you know, I should write and I should encourage other people to write their stories, because this is like, we're like the first generation of survivors and we're not gonna last on this planet. So we're like first-hand witnesses, and we should be writing and making sure that this is recording going down in history and preserved for future generations, so that no one else has to relive this kind of horrors.
And how is it that you have such a beauty with language? Your English is flawless.
You know, I've come to realize that when you have an African language as your fundamental, like, this is something that I discovered when I became an interpreter. I did not value my own language because I was so busy learning international languages like French and English, because I went to an international school in Kenya. But when I was forced to speak my language by becoming an interpreter, I realized that African languages have a lot of depth and a lot of wealth, and they're so rich, and they're kind of the basis and the fundamental for any other language that you may attempt to learn. So it's by going back to my language, the Kinyarwanda language, that I actually became smarter.
Because I'm just amazed at you and people who have the ability to have that grasp of languages. It's such a gift and such a talent. So I'm happy that you were able to put it to such good use.
Thank you. It's also from the need to tell the story, because I know I have to communicate this story. And I know it would take a lifetime for America to learn Kinyarwanda. So I better learn your language.
So what do you think about the United States getting involved in Nigeria and the search for the girls, and this hashtag that has gone about, bring back our girls?
Yeah, so in every conflict, given my life experience, I try to see beyond the present pressures, and I try to see the effects of the future. And obviously, there are a lot of good things that could happen out of America intervening and bringing back these girls. But at the same time, looking at it from North American perspective, I can see that we are not really addressing the deeper issue, because before there was a bring back our girls, there was a bring back, we should also have a campaign for bring back our boys, because in these conflicts, boys, men, our brothers are kidnapped, and they're also transformed and trained into becoming killers, and then they get turned around and they get used to attack the girls. So there is a huge issue that is not being spoken of, is also that these men who are in these conflicts, they are also abducted and they are also prisoners, and they also need attention and healing, and they also need to be kind of rescued. So in terms of America getting involved, I think America is involved in a lot of conflicts out there. And I don't know if it's necessarily a good idea to add on to one more conflict, because this conflict has only begun. It will escalate. And Nigeria is one of is the biggest population in Africa. It's also one of the biggest economies. It is poised to become the number one economy ahead of South Africa. So how is it possible that such a giant, so rich, could still be asking for help from America? That is also a huge question that people need to be careful about. So how long will this last? What will they definitely get out of it? And if it escalates, are you really ready for this conflict to escalate and to become worse than it actually is? Because this terrorist organization has been in action for more than 10 years.
Well, the good news is, as of yesterday, Nigeria asked the United Nations to designate this specific Islamic jihadist group, whose name translates into Western education as a sin, by the way, mm-hmm. as a terrorist organization. And apparently today, the United Nations Al-Qaeda Committee is expected to decide whether or not it will honor Nigeria's request, which goes at least to show that it's not all of Nigeria, it's a faction mm-hmm. in Nigeria, mm-hmm. which I'm happy to see. And you, just as an aside, Louise, I'm a member of Rotary, and our goal is to eradicate polio from the planet. Mm-hmm. And only Nigeria, Afghanistan, and Pakistan still have polio, and that's because of the politics that's going on there right now.
Yeah, you know, politics kill more people than guns actually do. So,
yeah, and it's just a shame because it's preventable and it has nothing to do with, you know, skirmishes and territory and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. We just want to come in and, you know, and not immunize and then go out and you can go about your business. But they won't even let us in all the time. So it's really very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. So I like the cause that you're bringing up, too. It's not just about the girls that's been kidnapped. It's about the boys that have been brainwashed. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be unspoken. So are you getting any voice with that message?
Well, it's an ongoing fight, you know, to make people understand the deeper levels of a conflict. It's an ongoing fight. For example, this particular organization says that Western education is forbidden. It's a sin. And yet they're using Western media to communicate that.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so what about Western media? That's not a sin. I mean, Western media would be a result of Western education.
Exactly.
And then the other thing, they're using the guns. Where are they getting? Have you seen how heavily armed they are? How mm-hmm. come they're not against Western guns?
Right. So it's,
you know, why,
yes.
Like, why walk just walk. Single out this attack on education, you know? And obviously, when it comes to girls, girls are like the last line of defense in an African society. In an African society, first the men, the fathers, they go to war to defend their nation. And then the brothers, their sons, they go to war to defend their nation. And then the women, they go to war to defend their nation. And then finally, the girls go to war to defend their nation. So we are like at the last front line of this war, because the African girls are now under attack, and they kind of have to learn how to survive, learn how to save themselves, learn how to defend themselves, because we need to be prepared for these kind of attacks, not just wait for the time when we're going to be saved, but also train in order not to be attacked, or when we're attacked, to be able to defend ourselves. You know, so it's an ongoing, cause, really.
And is there something that you think we can do that's tangible, that will have an effect, that will get some attention, that might create some momentum in that regard?
I think one of the important things is to do your research and find out who is doing great things in their communities. You know, there's a lot of activists and a lot of people with good hearts who do great things for their communities, but they don't get the media attention. You get the media attention when you're a terrorist, when you're getting bad things. But if you happen to be doing great things for your community, forget about it. You're not interesting. Unless, of course, you take off your dress, then maybe, you know. So
yes,
I would,
that gets attention.
You know, that gets attention. So I would definitely suggest that people out there who have a great heart and a great bank account need to find other people who have a great heart, but they don't have a great bank account. So they need to use their bank accounts to support those great people with great hearts and great causes through their bank accounts, so they can be able to be effective in their communities, because these terrorist organizations, they have a lot of funding. So, you know, we're like, it's an unfair fight because they get all the funding, but where's the funding for the good people?
Exactly. Now, you and I share something in common in that regard, because on our program, we tried to promote as much good news as possible and give people hope and give them tools and empower them. And I would imagine that your positive vision, did I say that right?
Yes.
Is along those lines. You want to share a little bit about that?
So yeah, Positive Vision. Positive Vision is an organization that we started among friends in Montreal. And then I went to Mali. We kind of wanted to do this where we go to the villages first before we think about doing something for them. And then we go to the villages and actually ask them, okay, so what do you have and what do you need, before we decide what to do with them, so that eventually when we got to do something, we would be responding to the specific needs that they asked for. Because one of the criticisms that we have is that a lot of times organizations sit here in North America and then they decide for Africa, and then they go and then they wonder why they're not being well received, you know?
Right.
Because as much as you may think that you're doing good, well, if it's not invited or welcomed by the local people, then you're not going to get in, right? That may be one of the problems why you don't get in, right? So we went there and we spoke to the villages, and I did a documentary about it and brought back the documentary. And then I was so transformed by the trip that it kind of changed the way I saw myself intervening in the world, the way I saw the positive vision. I also realized that the positive vision is not enough. It's not enough to have positive thinking and beautiful thoughts and good intentions and go out there with that. You know, those positive thinking need to be really backed up with real actions. So then I came back and I wrote this book, my first book, which is called The Nightmare of a Positive Vision.
Interesting.
Tell about how it is a nightmare to have a positive vision, but at the same time, you kind of need to keep going, because what is the alternative?
Exactly. I mean, it's not perfect and it never will be. But if we chip away at it, I always think about that in terms of one of my personal adages is one voice, one vote, and one paycheck. What we do, what we say, and how we spend our money.
Hold on, I'm going to have to write that down.
Even though we're one person,
voice,
one vote, one paycheck.
Wow.
Because that way, it does add up. Mm-hmm. We do make a difference. And I actually participated in a trip similar to what you're talking about in Dakar, Senegal, in a little village there with this group of women who travel for peace. And we pulled, and they said that what they wanted was a well that would survive when the monsoon wells are dry.
Yeah.
And so we helped finance and actually dig a well that went below the water table so that now the women of this particular village have water 12 months a year. And so then that increases their crop production, which increases their sustainability, which increases the food for their families, which also then increased food that they could sell. So it had all these ramifications, and we were just five gals.
Wow. You know, there's a reason why you and I are talking right now.
Yes. Yes. We definitely have similar visions.
We should definitely hook up next time, because Senegal is one of my next destinations. The country that we went to was Mali. And as you may know, the war has now happened to Mali. They're also under attack now. So we can't really do our project in a war zone. So we were thinking of going to a country not so far from it, still in the same zone, because the same zone has the same problems.
And Senegal, the people are exquisite. And even though it's a polygamist country, you can have four wives. The sister-wife relationship was interesting to witness. They were very forthcoming, the women, talking about that. But they also have the lowest HIV rate, I believe, in the continent.
Yeah.
So it's you know, not that I approve of it, but it's not my business, but it's helping keep their people healthy.
You know, I think when I go to Senegal, Senegalese men are so good looking. I'm the one who's going to have four husbands. I don't know, Bobby.
It's the truth. They are stunningly beautiful.
I don't know, Bobby, four part of four wives. I'm the one who's going to have four husbands.
Well, it's funny because the younger generations are eschewing that, because we met a Senegalese woman who she was the daughter of the fourth wife of her father. I believe she was the 15th child. She has married, and she is having one husband, and he is having one wife.
Mm.
So there are some changes that are coming down, which is interesting.
It's very interesting. You know, I understand their system, because in the true African culture, children are a wealth. Your wealth is actually not the money that you've invested on the stock market. Your wealth is your children and the education that you invest in them. So the more children that you have and the more they're educated, that's considered as a wealth to a society. So deep down, these men who have many wives and who make many children, that is like the original intent. Now, some people abuse it and other people don't really know how they got into it. But yeah.
It's something. Now, Louise, is there anything else that you'd like to add? We're going to be linking to your website so that whoever's listening to this knows how to find you, because you're a multifaceted hyphenate of a human being, which is also great to see. And I've enjoyed our conversation. Thank you again for making yourself available.
Yes, I have enjoyed this conversation, and thank you for what you're doing. I've been listening to a couple of your shows. You have interesting people and interesting topics, and it's really great to hear like the good news, because when do you ever get to hear the good news?
Yeah.
And the thing I want to tell people who are listening is that I do a live precast, a live interaction with the audience every Friday at 5 p.m. East on Spreecast. So it's spreecast.com. You just have to search Louise Uwacu, Uwacu, UWACU. And then people can tune in and ask me all kinds of questions live. It's a live conversation, and we like or dislike to tell the news. That's the formula.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Louise, continued success. I know this will not be our last conversation. I can't thank you enough for what you've done. And I always close my program by saying, I hope you're helping to make this world a better place.
Yes.
To our listeners. And you indeed certainly are.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for listening to The Maria Sanchez Show.
She'll give you something to talk about.